Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America, I'm Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter, and you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth, airing live on Heritage Radio Network. And today, we have a very special show. I'm, of course, joined by my host, Jesse Riley. Hi, Jess.
Hey there. How are you doing?
Good. How are you? And we have two special guests in the studio today, two of my hunting buddies, two guys, kind of knock-around guys from the neighborhood, regular guys, you'll call them. Chris Reynolds, my man, was on the emergency service unit of the NYPD for how many years, Chris?
I was in that unit for 5 years.
5 years. That's for you people who don't know that. Those are the guys that kick in the door, the big shots, like the drug dealers, you know, the real dangerous stuff. Not that little peddly handing out tickets on the street stuff. This is the real thing, the SWAT team. He's since then taken it easy now in the upper middle class neighborhood of Garden City, Long Island, but still serving his nation as a police officer. Chris Reynolds, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Chad. There was some intro.
Thank you. I'm a professional. I know what I'm doing. My other friend here, my other hunting buddy, is Joe Wydell. And Joe Wydell was in the New York City Fire Department for 17 years before being hurt, 9/11, down at the tragic site, helping out, you know, what our firemen went through down there, what everyone went through down there. Hurt himself, had to retire, forced to retire, and now he's a frustrated hunter and wants to get back on the job. I got to hear him crying all the time about this. I would love to be retired, but I don't get it. He's a man of action, great American, and we thank him for his service again to his nation. Joe Wydell, welcome aboard, Joe.
Thanks a lot, Chad.
And today's format is kind of a follow-up from last week. I was here by myself. Jesse was a little under the weather. And I tried to do a show about how to get into hunting. And we talked about hunter safety and firearm safety and, you know, what you needed kind of gear-wise and educationally-wise to get out in the woods. And it's funny because my friend Jesse here, my co-host, is an aspiring hunter?
Yeah, baby step hunter.
Right. So she's got some questions for the boys, and I want to hear them answer it and kind of throw in some stories.
I also thought it'd be like a good follow-up to your show last week, right? Because you talked about like the beginning part of hunting 101, and I think it'd be really good for people to hear like what actually happens when you go out your first time. You know, what are the things you need to think about and get in terms of gear? And also, like Chad, I mean, you grew up hunting, right? Your dad hunted. But a lot of people who want to get interested in hunting don't come from that background. And, like, what are the things they need to think about and do before they go out for the first time?
Right.
I'll jump in, Chad. I did grow up hunting with my father. He's hunted for, 50 years or so now. So I learned a lot of my lessons from him. I learned a lot of lessons from, you know, being in the hunting lodge or at a camp with friends and relatives that were out there. People that don't hunt in their family all the time, there's so many resources out there now with, social media, websites. There's all sorts of discussion boards. But just what we're doing today, like Chad and Joe and I, we all met each other through our children's school. And just started chit-chatting. And, you find out people's hobbies and habits. You find someone who has hunted before and just start that conversation. Just like what we're doing now. Just start asking questions of them. And the biggest thing I love about hunters is they generally love talking about it.
Right.
And they love teaching other people about our sport because it can be misunderstood.
It's funny because I mentioned that last week. You know, it's a community, and I said that in my show. I said, you know, find a hunter, talk to someone, join a club, go to the local store, and just start up a conversation, and you'll be surprised how open most hunters are, and they want more people involved in the sport. We want to promote the sport. Why don't you tell us, Chris, about your first memory of hunting? You know, what's your first memory? Your dad dragging you out? You were probably eight. What's
My first memory of hunting is watching my father leave the house to go hunting and not taking me.
And, that's funny, yeah.
You know, how furious I was because I thought I was old enough to do it. You know, meanwhile, I was 6 years old, I think. My first hunting trip, I was 7 or 8 years old. I was living out in Arizona at the time. And my father decided I was old enough to go along for the trip. So there was no hunting involved for me. It was just camping and learning and watching. You know, we went to some place way upstate New York, way upstate Arizona. We didn't even get any animals. We spent about 4 days out there in the woods. But I was up there with a real good family friend and a couple of brothers and my dad. And that was the first intro of just sitting in the woods, trying to be quiet, trying to listen to things, trying to learn things from my father. You know, safety was the first lesson. It was a gun hunt at the time, so safety was paramount. And it was a good lesson for me because it wasn't about going out there and getting an animal. You know, it was more about being out there with the family members and passing on. You know, like I said, hunters love to tell other people how to hunt or share experiences with them. And that's what those 4 days was sitting around the fire and listening to my father and his buddy tell stories about past hunts and, you know, giving us ideas on how we're going to go do our future hunts.
Yeah, that's great. Joe, what about you? Your first memory of hunting or how did you get into it? Your father? I know
no,
your father
no,
was
no, yeah, no? My father was into it. I didn't get into it until late in life. I was into football and sports and everything. So to be honest with you, I didn't get into it until probably my second year in college when I went up to East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, and I actually hooked up with a quarterback coach that came from Pennsylvania, and he was a hometown boy, and took me out a couple of times. To be honest with you, I didn't have a license or anything. You know, we went out in the woods, and he actually taught me, about hunting. And then probably didn't do anything with it again for probably about another 10 years.
Wow.
And then I hooked up with somebody in my wife's side of the family, and we actually learned together. He was a big golfer and went over to hunting. And we started doing rifle, and then when I met you, I got into bow hunting. So I'm pretty new to the sport, you know, probably within the last 8 years, maybe 10 years.
So there you go, Jesse.
Yeah, but hunting's not a solitary activity.
No, you know what it was? When I got into it, my father gave me his bright orange jacket and these tan pull-up overall things, you know, with this blue orange pillow, you know, to heat my butt with, you know what I mean, which was so outdated.
But it was flooded with fox urine.
Yeah, exactly. 40-year-old ammunition, you know. So for me, I had to start, you know, from scratch, you know, when you talk to people. And I think the biggest thing is keeping warm and dry.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you love it. I mean, it's a great sport. It
now, really Chris, you rolled your eyes a little bit. You wanted to say something about the solitary comment.
No, I it can be. And that's one of the things I love about it now where I did 10 years ago. I just, my daughter came up with me the first time this year as a 10-year-old. She's starting to learn how to hunt. So it's not solitary for me anymore. It's
right.
I have a stand that I built that it can accommodate two people up there now. So now hunting to me is I'm sitting in the woods with my daughter some of the times. My nephews come up, and 14, 15, 16-year-old nephews who aren't able to use the gun yet, they sit with me. So, you know, 5, 6 years ago, I was in a tree stand 12 hours a day by myself.
By yourself.
Which I loved at the time. You know, you just kind of unplug from everyday activities and sit in that tree stand, and all you can do is think, you know, think about things. Listen to the birds, the squirrels, you see things that everyone else is sitting at their desk or at their job, and I'm not. I'm in a tree stand, and I'm enjoying everything nature has to give. So you can sit there completely by yourself, but there's nothing prouder. This year I had two nephews in a tree stand together, 1 16, 1 15. The 16-year-old shot a deer, and to see these two young boys go through that together, dragging their deer out together, unforgettable and a very proud moment for an uncle.
So you took your daughter hunting for the first time this year?
I took my daughter Mary hunting for the first time. She's the first girl out of you know, the last 50 years in our family to go up hunting, but she's the first one that has shown an interest in it, and she did great. You know, we were up there for 3 days during the bow hunting season. It was freezing. It was raining. She didn't complain. Ourselves, we did not get an animal during that trip, but my cousin got an animal, got a deer, so she was able to see that whole process from start to finish on what happens once you do, you know, if you're fortunate enough to take a deer. You know, you don't take it lightly. You did kill something, you know, and you could treat it respectfully, and we cleaned it and brought it to the butcher, and you know, we've since had some of those meals together. You know,
that's great.
She's had venison. She's not a huge fan of it. Right. My other two children eat it, but you know. It's all about being organic these days, right, Chad?
That's it.
There's nothing more organic.
Hey, the hunting movement was the original organic movement.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone's running around Bushwick. Yep. You're all into organic. Right, Jack? Jack's smiling because he knows I'm always yelling.
No,
I invented
the organic
movement.
Right.
Your father invented it. Our parents did it, not you people in Bushwick. So deal with that. Joe, we're talking about first-time hunters this year. You brought your son out also this year. I know you did too.
Just to add to Chris's too, you know, the sport is opening up now too. It's a woman's sport, you know what I'm saying? It definitely could be. 2 years ago out in the island there, a girl that I had been in class with, we had got our archery license together. She had shot an 11-pointer first time she went out. So, you know, it's definitely a woman's sport. But, yes, I did bring my son out. He's going to turn 11 years old, of course. There wasn't going to be a deer in sight, you know, the way that they, how quiet he's sitting, you know, with the chair rattling and scraping the tent and, you know, chomping on candy and, you know, asking when it's going to end. And
right.
But it was a good first experience. Yeah. You know,
I had the same exact experience with my son this year, and I was telling the story. He was eating an apple. He said, "I'm hungry." I said, "Well, hey, have an apple." It was the loudest apple consumption I've ever heard in my life. It was like a ravenous... pack of wolves found an apple and were fighting over it. And I said to him, I said, "Well, Joe, we're not going to see any animals if you keep making noise." And he waited about a second. He looked at me. He's a bright kid, you know, and he looked at me. He said, "How are the deer going to know that I'm a person eating an apple? I could be a deer eating an apple." And I couldn't argue with him. I was like, "Yeah, it's a good point. Just try to do it a little more quiet."
So getting back to the tree stand, like, how do you find a spot for a tree stand?
That's the million-dollar question.
I can't answer that. Sorry.
Secret.
It really does depend on where you hunt. So, and some properties, it's just there may only be one or two spots where you can put a tree stand. There may only be a couple of trees that will enable you to do it. But you know, the best case scenario is scouting. I know Joe and Chad spent a ton of time doing this. But you walk your property. And you have to find locations that are better than others that'll hold deer. If there's a food source around, if there's a, you know, known game trails where we can see the deer come from this spot to that spot, and they're coming through this kind of corridor. I hunt, you know, you can hunt upstate on, let's say, 300 acres of land. When you bow hunt, I need to be within 30 yards of a deer.
Right.
So you got to narrow that property down somehow, you know.
That's
one of the tricks.
That's really close.
Right, and we're looking for visible signs, you know, a lot of times. So scouting is an ongoing process. You could be scouting during the hunting season.
You have to, yeah.
You have to, you know, because you go there in August, September, everything's peachy. Oh, look at this trail. There's droppings everywhere. We're going to be on deer. You sit in your tree stand for a week and not see
anything.
Yep. You know, the change of season, the food sources have changed.
So you're looking for deer activity.
Deer activity, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea that in New York State, you know, you see these hunting shows on a Sportsman's Channel. I love it. And they're glassing and they're like, you don't do that in New York.
No,
it's very
hard.
I mean, very few properties have a big open field where the deer are all going to congregate, yeah. Especially during the hunting season. So, you know, we're looking for sign. We're looking for, you know, droppings. We're looking for hoof prints. We're looking for activity of the deer, scrapes, rubs, things of this nature, showing me that deer are there, not right at this moment, but they will be back. And, you know, we try to pattern the deer.
I was just upstate a couple of weeks ago, and there was still snow up there.
Mm-hmm.
So snow is perfect. If you can get a few inches of fresh fallen snow, you go out a day, 2 days later, you're going to see deer tracks. You're going to see coyote prints, raccoon. You'll see animal footprints. So that'll give you one indication of. But like, it doesn't mean they're there in October. But
let's step back a second. Like, for most New Yorkers, the difference between a deer track and a coyote track.
Well, that's all goes back to learning. You know, I mean, you have to learn. Right? Where you're,
I'll tell you what a disease this has become for me. My Mary, Megan, and Liam, my three children. The little guy's 7, and Mary's 11 now. We walk through the woods all year round, and when they see droppings, you know, which is poo, animal poo for everybody else who don't know what droppings is, they stop and poke at it with a stick and determine what kind of animal droppings it is.
You've done a great job.
And then, yes, if it's coyote droppings or bear, we have black bear up there, we like to open it up and see what they're eating. You know, mostly seeds, but sometimes you'll find some bone fragments from the coyote poops and the bear stuff. You can we found a toe in there, a deer hoof in there one time. But yes, that's you got to throw. I don't know. You throw caution out the window and just learn. This is what I love about being in the woods. Mm-hmm. I love doing something that other people don't get the opportunity to do. And if I can go upstate and spend 8 hours a day in the woods, I do. And I just make it fun, and my kids do the same thing now. You know, all they want to do is go in the woods and hike.
That's
you know,
great.
And find things. They point out tracks. My daughter's found some fossilized rocks up there. I just you know being outside. The killing part of hunting is probably about 15% out of mm-hmm. the whole thing. You know.
Thank you, and we can't forget that. That sometimes you know I was telling these guys on the way here we were talking about it. You know, and. This time of the year, I always remember that, and I always keep that in mind. It's never been about the trophy for me, you know, and that. But I sometimes forget that in a tree stand. I was telling these guys, you know, you mm-hmm. sit there for you put so much work and effort into the hunt that you really want to harvest a awesome animal. But you know, so I'll have does, spikehorns, forkhorns walking by me and saying, "Ah, I'm passing," end up harvesting nothing. And I got to remember, you know, everyone should remember, it's not about that. It's about being out there in the outdoors, you know, getting back to nature, not to be corny. But right. that's really what it's about. And especially mm-hmm. now, for us, at least, you know, we're kind of taking over where our fathers were and where the people who brought us in. Now we're passing that on to our kids, who hopefully will pass it on to their kids. And it's, you know, we're part of something. We're part of that community, and it's great, you know, family, the whole thing.
So do you guys hunt throughout the year, like the different animals based on the season?
I'm trying to get into it. You know, mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm retired, so, you know, I'm definitely trying to get into it. You know, I never did duck hunting or geese hunting or any of that stuff, rabbit hunting, and I would like to try it, you know.
Because you said turkey's coming up, right?
Yes, turkey.
May 1st, spring turkey. And that let's get back
gobble,
to that.
Gobble, gobble.
Yeah, I went yeah. turkey hunting with my man Chris here. A couple of years ago. We'll talk about that. I kind of told the story. He had a bone to pick with that and everything. So we'll hash it out after this break. So we're going to take this short break, and we'll be right back with the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org.
This one's called Real Long Way to Go by Brothers NYC on heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats, Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com. Did you know HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization? If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us in our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm here with my co-host, Jesse Riley, and my dear friends, Chris Reynolds and Joe Wydell. And before the break, we started chit-chatting about turkey.
Turkey, right. Turkey season's coming, right?
Right, which we're going to do another show on probably in 2 weeks, right prior to spring season. I think right now, on the 23rd, they do a youth hunt, New York State youth hunt. Unfortunately, none of us here have a child old enough. Joe's no. getting there.
Yeah,
I think 12 is 12? The age for getting out there. 12. So you'll get a head start pretty soon on the spring turkey. But Chris and I don't know, two seasons ago, something like that, we went on a turkey hunt, and I said, he said, hey, you want to go turkey hunt? I said, yeah, I got permission to hunt this property in Orange County. I said, why don't we drive up there? So the funny thing about it is every time Chris and I go on a hunt, something seems to happen.
Or nothing seems to happen.
Well, a lot of nothing.
That's what you meant.
No, if you remember that first spring hunt, we got bin Laden that night. I picked him up at his police station. I was sitting behind the police station,
right.
Listening to the radio that night, whatever time the news broke, and we were leaving at 2 in the morning to go drive to Orange County to go hunting. This show, now we're engaged in something where we're in your vehicle driving somewhere, and obviously the tragedy in Boston that I want to just say something about at the end of the show. And our coyote hunt, we had the blizzard of the century when we went up. Say we were up to our waist in snow trying to hunt down a coyote. But we go on this turkey hunt, and I tell them, don't worry, there's turkey everywhere. They're going to be banging into us. Don't worry. And we got out of the car, and we walked a little bit, and I was doing some gobble calls, and nothing. And usually you hear them right away, and I was like, oh, man, he's looking at me like, what are you kidding me here? There's no turkeys. We walk. It's 4 in the morning. Right, so we walk up a little more, another gobble call, nothing, a little more gobble call, nothing. I said, you know what, let me try the crow. I never really use it, but let's try it. Two or three crow calls, and the woods lit up, man. You heard the gobbles now. They were pissed. This crow came into the area, so we backed up. We got back to the car. We were waiting because it's still very early. And finally, you know, sun started to break a little bit. We went and set up, and we thought we were in a good spot, and I was behind Chris a little bit. He was going to be the shooter. I was calling. And the turkeys were responding, and every once in a while I saw a head pop up, and I'll let Chris take over. Because my take on it was, he should have pulled the trigger and shot a goddamn turkey. He seems to have a different take, and in full disclosure, I couldn't really see his angle. So I'm
I was being one
here.
With nature at the time,
that's,
Chad.
That's precious.
Jess, you were talking about hunting. Right. This was my first turkey hunt. I had never hunted before. I've been hunting for 30-something years now. I'd never turkey right. hunted. When we were walking down that road and he was doing those calls, he was all upset because it took so long to hear a bird. Once we finally heard that turkey gobble, I had like the biggest smile came across my
right.
face. Just
uh-huh.
it was a new experience for me. At so you're never like too old to learn. I thought it was spectacular. So then, yes, I wanted to go kill my first turkey, but we were setting up, and this back and forth gobbling. He's calling, the turkey's gobbling. He's calling, the turkey's gobbling. And it went on for probably 10, 12, 15 minutes before I finally even saw a bird. But I couldn't tell whether it was a hen or a male gobbler, at the time. So
right.
I just watched it, and then sure enough, here comes another bird and another bird and another bird. And I got, I don't want to say confused, I got engrossed by the beauty. of the birds and the fact that, holy crap, we just did what we came to do. Like, right. We picked out a spot in the middle of nowhere. We set down some decoys. We started calling, and these birds came to us. At the end, Chad was like, what the hell was that? He's like, what happened? You didn't? I'm like, what? He's like, you didn't shoot. I'm like, holy shit. I was
mesmerized.
Yeah, I really.
No, and you know what? I bust his balls a little bit. It doesn't even really matter. Was. He's right. This guy, he's a natural, because that's what it was about. We did what we wanted to do. We communicated with a wild animal out in the woods and got to engage. I think you got video, if I remember.
Yeah,
right?
I had some small little video camera. I started videotaping hunts, but that is what it is. It would have been nice to kill a turkey, but I swear to God, at that moment, I forgot about it. Now, that normally doesn't happen to me. Normally, right. in the deer woods, I'm fairly primal. Like, something comes out, and I want to kill it. And as Chad was talking about before, he's had an opportunity where he hunts really nice property, and he's able to pass animals. I don't want to shoot that. I don't want to shoot that. I don't want to shoot that. I hunt a property where I can go for 4 days and not see a deer.
Right.
So if I get an opportunity to kill a healthy animal, I'm going to take the shot. I don't care if it's a doe. You know, if I have the permit, I'm taking a doe. It's, you know, a nice healthy animal gives me 45 to 50 pounds of meat.
Right.
That's 30 times a year where I get to go home, cook that thing up, and every time I cook it, I get to relive my hunt. Every time I barbecue a steak up, I'm remembering how I took it, who helped me drag it out, who helped me clean it.
Exactly. That's the beauty of it.
Well, let's go back to that, right? Because we said, like, hunting, it can be a solitary activity, right? You get a large animal. Don't you need somebody to help you drag it out of the woods?
Well, the radio listeners can't see Joe. Joe could drag a Volkswagen
Joe
out of the woods.
Joe could drag all three of us right here.
But, yes, myself and Chad, generally where I hunt, I'm no more than 200-400 yards away from another person. So I will go get help. If you're gun hunting, they'll hear the shot. They'll probably come over and check it out. If not, you just leave the animal right where it is. If someone's coming out for lunch, you hook up with them, and then it becomes like a family process, because guys want to get involved. They want to congratulate you. They want to help you drag it out. It's, you know, we're going to take some pictures and memorialize this thing. And, you know, especially with the younger kids, we want them helping dragging it out. We want them to see how hard it is. It's not like you just go out and shoot something. And, you know, they got to start learning how to clean the animal before you bring it to the butcher. And
so now, like, when you field dress an animal, right, what do you do with the entrails that you take out?
Goes right back, going back to the organics here, goes right back into the circle of life. It'll go back out into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all sorts of scavengers up there, coyotes and crows, and they take what they want, and, you know, the forest floor takes the rest.
Yeah, and I'm sure we all have stories about, you know, gutting our first deer, and it's never easy. You know, I the first time I did it, I was ready to vomit all over the place. It was warm. It was more of the heat from the animal, from the guts. But the club Joe and I hunt in now, out on Long Island, bow hunting only, we were, I had harvested the first year in the club, I hit a doe or so, I got a doe. And I was used to hunting upstate where, you know, you had to drag a deer out. Now, where I hunt now, my primary tree stand is probably, it couldn't be more than 500 yards from the clubhouse. And it's probably 100 yards from the main road where I could actually pull my car up. We're out in the Hamptons, basically, on Long Island in Quag. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't thinking. I shot the deer. I found it, and I gutted it out there in the field and dragged it back to the clubhouse, and the president of the club almost had a heart attack, and he said, where's the guts? And I said, what do you mean? They're in the woods. Oh, you can't leave them out there. This is our property. We got it. I'm like, won't the fox eat it and the crows and everything else?
It's a little different on Long Island, right?
And I said to him, and that was our first run-in. We really, you know, and he's a great guy, Bob. But I said to him, I said, Bob, if you want to grab a garbage bag and go out there and get it, for me it's staying
in a yes. shovel.
Yeah, but now we have, you know, we have at the clubhouse, we're spoiled brats. We have a gutting table. We do everything
fancy.
At a table with a light.
Water, yep.
Yeah, it's the big leagues, man. Running water, thank you.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I know the first we shot a pretty nice bear on the property, and it was just me and my father, and we couldn't move the thing. You know, there was no lifting it. There was no dragging it.
Right, because that's a considerably larger animal.
Right, and then that's Joe was talking about quads. Like we were fortunate enough to have a couple of quads, and we were able to like tie a rope over a tree branch, tie it to the quad, drive the quad away, raise the bear up, and then we cleaned it right there out in the woods. And then, you know, then it was light enough where we were able to lower it back down onto the quad. So if you kill it, you're going to figure out a way to get it out of there.
Yep, that's one of the catchphrases of the show. If you kill it, eat it. So eat it, you got to get it out of the woods.
Right.
That's you know, the point of it, like we've been discussing. Joe, we only got a minute left. Tell us something. I put you on the spot.
No, like we were saying, dragging out. I was up in Pennsylvania a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about a 650-pound bear, how it took eight guys almost 6 hours to get it out of the woods. You know, so it's not an easy task. You know, everybody thinks you go out there, like Chris was saying, you shoot the thing and, you know, throw it on your back and carry it out. It ain't that easy. Dead weight.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to get it out. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. So, again, the community, this guy had obviously sports staff.
Yeah, I know he was only hunting with two guys, Chad.
Right.
So, you know, five other guys were picked up from somewhere. It doesn't matter. They'll come and help you.
The community is going to come together. You know?
Exactly.
On the other hand, I've carried deer by the ankle over my back, you know, walking out. I had guys making fun of me. They wanted to know if it was a rabbit or a deer.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? That's going to be some nice tender venison.
That's right.
So you can laugh all you want.
Meat in the freezer.
Well, listen, guys, first of all, I want to thank you guys for being on the show today. It's great. But I wanted to mention something before the show ended. You know, our hearts and prayers go out to the people and the families, everyone affected by this, really the whole country. This was a heinous act. Again, we've talked about this on the show, savages as far as I'm concerned. But our prayers go out to the people of Boston, those families affected. For me, I can only speak for myself and I guess the show as the host. I want to know who did it, and I want retribution. That's how I operate. So, you know, my prayers go out to you. I felt a little silly even doing the show today, to tell you the truth, talking about hunting when something like this is going on in the country. So my prayers go out to the people of Boston. Thank you again, guys. Joe Wydell.
Thank you, Chad.
Awesome. You're an awesome guy. Thank you for your service to the nation.
Yeah.
Chris, thank you.
My pleasure. Jess, get out there and go hunting.
Yes, Jess.
That's definitely all the time we have. I'd like to thank Jack for producing and engineering today's show. You can find archived episodes of the Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. Sorry. Thank you very much, America. And remember, if you kill it, you better eat it. Thank you.
It's my life, so much strife in the end.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.